You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Find more great shows like this at WeAreLibertarians.com.
All right, we are live, everybody. Welcome, We Are Libertarians. You got a main episode here. You got no Chris Spangle because Chris is busy doing everything under the sun. Huge news on that. We'll talk about that in a second after we make some introductions here. I am Hody Johns, and I am co-hosting today with everybody's favorite, Reinhold. Reinhold, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right. Been an interesting couple of weeks.
Yeah, it has.
About to get into.
Yeah, interesting. You know, I think for you and me, thankfully, we're not a part of getting shot while we're running around, and also not a part of the LNC, which are the two big items on the docket today. So it's one of those things to watch from afar is a lot better than to be involved in. So, yeah, let's get started here. The shooting of Ahmaud Arbery, guys, really sad. Obviously, if you don't live in a cave, you've probably seen enough about it. This is something that actually wasn't a big deal at all. And then it was just a case where it's like some guy got shot and apparently he robbed a place and they're not going to press charges against the guy who shot him because everything is sketchy. And then a video gets released, leaked by the, I guess, would-be defendant's friends, because people were still like, I don't know, something still seems fishy. And everybody's like, well, now it seems even more fishy. Mm-hmm. And then we found out some things about the prosecutor, and the prosecutor blatantly lied about the evidence in the case and all kinds of other stuff. So let's start with that. Ahmaud Arbery, jogger, a few different points of this. I find that this is the reason this is getting so much traction, because there's some that are very blatant. We had the shooting of a girl who get it was a no-knock warrant that they raided the wrong house. The guy was in custody.
It was like 1 or 2 in the morning, and they no-knock raided the house. They said that they announced, but none of the neighbors said that they did. All they heard was pounding and shooting. So they didn't hear anybody say that they were the police. So it was basically a no-knock raid. The man who was living there grabbed a gun to defend himself because he thought somebody was breaking into the house, and they shot him. And she was an EMT, so she was off shift trying to get some sleep when it happened. So
yeah, and I don't want these victims to be nameless here. The victim in this case is Breonna Taylor, and she was Black, and so this is kind of part of it. We've just had three major incidents this week. There was the video. Now, I don't believe they've released this guy's name, but who just got punched in the back of the head while he's getting arrested.
Oh, I saw that one. Yeah, he was getting arrested, and the guy just kept hitting him.
He's got
he got punched in the back of the head.
And he just got behind his back against the wall, and the guy is just sucker punching him and not even going down. That's one, if you just want to make fun of a guy for being really weak and trying to take it out on somebody else, this is when you would do it. That officer had already had a history of shooting unarmed suspects slash getting too rough with people. And now we have a video. So what you're
going to hear in that one.
Okay.
Is that the officer had told him to get on the ground and he was not doing it. He was not complying. Therefore, they were trying to make him comply and get on the ground.
The thing is, you can hear him in the video.
Yeah.
And I think
I'm just telling you what the defense is.
Sure. I mean, there's an excuse for so much of this stuff. And at some point you just need to stop and say, if you have to keep making excuses, like here's a great example. I restaurant management has kind of been my life for a long time. If I have an employee who 5 times a year takes sick days, that's not a big deal. I'm glad they stay home when they're sick. If I have them 28 times in a year take sick days, that's a system, right? They have a system of missing things. So the issue is, if we have 1 or 2 incidents ever, you know, and you just kind of say, that's the hiccup. When we have 3 incidents in a single week of kind of everything coming to the surface and being like, yeah, this is kind of going on every single week that you look for it, you're going to find stuff like this. That's a system. And that's the problem that we have, is when you make a lot of excuses to explain away this behavior, you're explaining away a system, as opposed to saying, maybe there are a couple singular incidents where there's a mistake, right? Like, I kind of understand if you point a realistic BB gun at an officer, You know, I don't believe in shoot first, ask questions later, but there's some times when I say, okay, he actually did fear for his life. But when a cop's like, what, shooting a groundhog crossing the street / shooting a chihuahua in the face,
there was a case in Indianapolis about the same time the Arbery stuff hit, mm-hmm. where a guy led police on a high-speed chase. He had warrants for a lot of things. There was rumors that he had a gun on him. Mm-hmm. After the chase ended, he gets out, and I don't know if he had the gun or if he pointed it or if they thought he was doing it. So there's a lot more there involved in the situation where you can kind of go, yeah, I mean, that's different. That's fearing for your life. That's not knowing the whole situation and the person acting in a way that's really a concern. But that's not chasing somebody down as a citizen and putting a gun in their face.
Right.
And then if they try to take it from you, then you shoot them. You know, I mean.
Yeah, we're bouncing off of a lot of different stories, and I feel I'm kind of going through some ADHD right now, I guess. I want to talk about everything at the same time, but that's kind of the context within this Ahmaud Arbery thing, is that we're looking at a lot of incidents where this is all popping up, and then we have this, and then we have a lot of people making excuses for it. So just to start with the details of the case, because I've kind of been looking more at the detail side and Reinhold's kind of been dealing with the argumentative debate side. I guess I'll start with just some of the details. The prosecutor Barnhill, when I say he lied, they're very blatant lies. And this is regardless of how you want to defend it. He lied about the case. So what he said is there's a 911 call and that existed, but talks about him burglarizing a place. That part did not exist. Then he said there's another video around that shows him robbing a place. And there is a video around, but it doesn't show him robbing a place. So this is all part of the issue, right? Is that the prosecutor actually made excuses for why the shooting took place. So even before the shooting takes place, Arbery, he's jogging. He goes into a house that is apparently under construction. This was actually just released today that they, because they said, why is he going to a place that's under construction? Well, I guess their water fountain or water device was enabled. So he grabbed a drink. And I guess that's what the video shows, is him going to grab a drink and then continuing jogging. So what happens when that happens? Well, it gets recorded. Somebody calls 911 and says, word for word, there's a black man jogging in my neighborhood, and decides to call 911 to report it. And of course, the 911 dispatcher, I say, of course, they aren't always positive, but in this case, it was someone with common sense who says, well, did they do anything? No, but he's not supposed to be here. Well, it's a neighborhood street, but you kind of got to let joggers happen at some point.
And black
people happen. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and this is the part where we're going to get into, and this is I'm trying to introduce it as nicely as I can, but then you get these two guys and the video shows them, I guess, pulled up on a street. Arbery it's taken from a dash cam footage of somebody's behind this thing. And so it's unfortunately not the best footage, but it's clear enough that these guys, I guess, have pulled up and they're like, hey, stop. We want to ask you some questions. One of them is in the car with a handgun. And the guy who jumps out of the car has a shotgun. And he points it at Arbery and says, stop. Hey, you, sir, stop. Arbery, having a gun aimed at him, throws a punch and attempts to grab the shotgun away. And the guy with the handgun ends up shooting. There's a part where it goes out of the frame for like a millisecond, but it's not like one of those, like, you have to assume a lot of conspiracy things happen in that millisecond when it cuts out. Ultimately, what happens is, Arbery took some swings at him, grabbed him, swings away, and he gets shot twice after the release.
Three times
after the release.
One time the wrist was grazed, I think. Yeah.
Okay, got it. Falls down and he dies. And the prosecutor, of course, made a bunch of excuses for why this had to happen. There was a lot of talk of citizen's arrest. One of these guys was an ex-police officer. And then, of course, you got the media, which and this is always the unbelievable part to me. And before I turn it away to you for the discussion, Reinhold, is they immediately go to smearing the guy's reputation. I guess he had gotten arrested for shoplifting 5 years ago. Okay, so what does that mean in the context of this case? Even if he had robbed the place 5 seconds ago, does he deserve to die? So when you say, oh, he was shoplifting 5 years, well, is he guilty for life? I mean, there's a lot of people in America who have mugshots that don't need that black mark for life. And obviously that pertained in no way to him jogging, getting a drink from a house under construction, and running down the street. The other issue, of course, is that it was, must have been self-defense. This is the most mind-numbing one that I've heard so far, but that it wasn't self-defense because he initiated contact. Okay. When someone is aiming a loaded gun at you or jumps out of a car, aims a gun at you, you are exercising your self-defense if you try to wrestle the gun away from them or punch them. We can always talk about good ideas, bad ideas. I remember this back to Rodney King, and you almost want to scream at him while he say, like, stay down, don't get up. But at the same time, he's not hurting anybody. He should be let go. I just say that I don't want somebody fighting for a gun, not because they don't have a right to. I just fear for their lives. In this case, rightfully so, because these guys killed him, right? They wanted to ask him a few questions and they killed him. He had nothing on him. Nothing stolen on him. So that kind of blows the process. I mean, what, he looted a house and then what, did he stash it someplace? I mean, this guy Barnhill was the prosecutor and just did an absolutely terrible job in trying to cover for these guys. He has recused himself and he is under federal investigation. He may get disbarred. I hope he does. I mean, it's just, when you are a prosecutor, your job is to prosecute everything that you can. Maybe you lose, but you are at least supposed to prosecute everything you can, unless it's very blatant that it's a waste of time. If anything, this is like the definition of something that was either straight up murder or very close to it, much closer to the murder side. So you absolutely have a case to investigate it. So, of course, this stirs up a whole bunch of people. And unfortunately, I believe Chris said we even had a record number of comments about this on our page from people that said Ahmaud Arbery deserves to die. And that's where I'll let you take it away, Reinhold.
Okay. Drop that in my lap.
Yeah.
So first of all, when you said that the prosecutor is supposed to prosecute everything they can, you might want to tell William Barr that. But the...
Touche.
So the issue here is that nobody deserves to die for something that isn't, you know, he was put in that situation. He was not the instigator. I don't know why these people think that he's the instigator, just because he didn't act his place. You know, you put a gun to somebody's head and tell them to stay still, and you're not a policeman who is authorized to do that. They have no idea. Just like the person who was defending his home when the no-knock raid happened. How are they supposed to know? They're defending their home. He was defending himself. If it had been two black guys and a white woman, and she had tried to get away from them and grab the gun as best she could, because that's what they're told to do, would they feel the same way? You know, so here's the thing. So there's a couple different things going on here. First of all, there's the racial component. So everybody's complaining because this is being made into a racial issue. And I'm like, okay, well, first of all, it is kind of a racial issue. The fact that the people called 911. Now, we don't know who called 911, I don't believe. We don't know if it might have been this guy's who called 911, right? I mean, I would kind of think it might be. So if they're calling 911 saying this guy's suspicious because he's a black guy in our neighborhood, yeah, it's going to be a racial component to it. You're looking at him differently where he's at, and you would treat him differently because of his color of his skin. But if you take that out of it, if he had been white, you still had a corrupt prosecutor covering for a former associate when the police wanted to arrest him, and he said no. He told him no, that they couldn't arrest him. That's the corrupt action right there. We've got a dearth of corrupt prosecution going on, corrupt prosecutors going on in his country, apparently. It's from the top all the way down. So the least you could do is be upset about that, right? Yep. Let's just say, okay, we'll give you a pass and say that you don't think that this is racially motivated, that this is just a situation. That situation is still bad. That situation still sucks, whether it's a white guy or a black guy, right?
Yeah.
But you have to start looking at it in context of why were they stopping him? Because he was in their neighborhood or because he was in their neighborhood while being black? And I'm sorry, you're going to have a hard time convincing me that they were stopping him just because he was in their neighborhood and just because they thought he was stealing something when there was no evidence or any indication that they did. And that's the problem with their defense of using the citizen's arrest, is that they have to see an act of crime. That crime has to be a felony, right? And there has to be some sort of dangerous intent or something for the person that they can't just report it and let the police go find the guy, right? So walking through a construction site, I'm sorry, is not going to qualify for citizen's arrest.
Right. And I mean, even the advice from the dispatcher, I guess follow them, we'll have somebody get there, you know, but you don't have to, don't confront them. I mean, this is the advice you get. I mean, this is preschool level advice. Don't confront them. Don't initiate force. Let them go. If they are running away, that means the situation's getting de-escalated. We can get them later. This is why a lot of people don't do hot pursuits in counties anymore, because they just say, we'll catch them later. There's no sense in riling up now. That results in death and danger for everybody involved, not just the victim, or not just, I guess, the potential criminal, you know? And so you let them go, you know, well, so that you can get them later.
There's another case going on in Georgia right now that's in the court system, where a woman saw an accident, and she saw somebody leave the site of the accident. Now, the person who left the site of the accident was a black man, and apparently he was trying to get himself to the hospital because he was having a diabetic episode, right? And that might have been why the crash happened, but he was trying to get to help, and he was kind of probably not completely there. She chased him down, stopped, you know, made him stop the car, got out, and ended up shooting and killing him, right? Citizen's arrest, right? Okay. So she's on trial for, I don't remember if it's manslaughter or murder. I don't remember the charge, but she's everybody's trying to use that as kind of an example of Georgia law is very clear that you can't use deadly force on something that's not, you know,
right,
that high of a crime.
Yeah. And I guys who are commenting right now, thank you so much for your comments. Thankfully, this is kind of restoring a lot of my belief in what I know that we stand for, because I know we just had a lot of people mention the kind of Confederate sympathizers. Ryan called them out on it, and they kind of outed themselves. But yeah, Rob, JD, Jonathan, all you guys commenting right now, yeah, I'm glad you agree. I mean, I just feel the same way. It's just one of those that you say, even if you take race out of it, it's awful. Yeah. You put race into it, and the thing is, this isn't me putting race into it. The caller said it's a black man running in my neighborhood. This is just what it is. You get more suspicious of it. I want to be sympathetic. I wrote an article about this because I come from an environment where systemic racism isn't as systemic, I guess I should say. If you have a Confederate flag, like bumper sticker or something, your car is going to get keyed. I had a patron at a restaurant say something casually racist to some guests, and he got stabbed in the parking lot. Right? Like, this is a... I am not in a situation where we almost have the opposite problem. I don't want to say too much because obviously there's still a lot of catching up to do. But what I see is almost too much dismissal of white people because of their opinion. I'm not trying to dismantle that opinion or your experience. All people's experiences are valid, but this includes the experience of Ahmaud Arbery. Bottom line is, even if this is your experience, take the circumstances of this case and ask yourself if that would happen in your area. And I would think no. Would you get, I mean, at least for me in the area that I live in. Now, I have a friend in North Carolina where he's like, yeah, that's kind of run of the mill here, you know? And I'm just like, I don't want to say all of North Carolina the same way. This is something that is very localized. But in his case, he was like, if somebody yells the N-word, nobody bats an eye. If you get in somebody's face for yelling the N-word, everybody looks at you like, eh, like, you know. And so this is what systemic racism looks like. If it was just one individual case of racism, I get it. You can't root out all racism. But if it was one individual case, that it would be one thing. But this is multifaceted. Sorry, you're about to say something.
No, I'm just going to point out that my experience growing up was a little bit different than yours in my area. I've actually seen a cross burning.
Wow. So, I mean, it puts it in perspective. You know,
yeah. I lived in an area where, okay, so the one of the larger cities, as it were, in the county I live in, we live out in the country, so there's not a lot of stuff going on. And yeah, we all keep to ourselves and we're pretty cool, but there's a certain city that we were near where it was a known rule that you were not to be in town after dark if you were black. Or wow, you would have it taken out on you. So, and this is in the 80s and 90s, right? So, yeah, we think we've come a long way on this race thing, but there's still pockets and areas and people who... I think at this point, if somebody's racist, it's mostly because they don't like themselves. So they're looking at hating other people more so that they can find some sort of good in them, right? So you're different than me, therefore you're bad. And it's not much different than some of the bully behavior that we have when we grow up, that people try to find something that's different with somebody else in order to feel better than them.
Yeah.
But I think with society's come a long way. But then I also think society is starting to backslide back to the way it was, because we're starting to try to apologize for those people and those views.
Right.
I don't think it's the best way to go. And there's a conflict where you say, I want these people to be out in public, and so I know who they are, so I can avoid them and not do business with them and not participate in society with them. But then the other part is that maybe it's better when we were making it such a stigma to do that those people weren't passing on their views to people who are susceptible to that aren't actually there yet, but they've had some bad experiences and now they're starting to question things. And then somebody gets in their ear and starts saying, oh, look at those people, it's them. That can start to stick. And so we have both sides of that.
Right.
And it's a tough thing to come down on too.
It is. And like, here's the thing. I fight for people's free speech, right? At all times. Agreed. Even if it's dumb speech, I have lent this platform, the Wheeler, amidst a lot of controversy and discussion between all of us wall contributors, to some people we don't like, because I would rather them say their stupid views, or in this case, boring views. I think if we're thinking about the same
boring one. And dangerous and same
boring way. And dangerous views. Yeah. And let them get smacked down because they're boring and dangerous and it's obvious. And I'd rather kill it with sunlight, I guess, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But there is something to be said. It is our platform and it's absolutely my right as well to exercise my freedom of speech and association and say, no, you're not going to talk on this platform.
But also you have Vorha, whose main idea is that he's going to say certain things that are very controversial because he knows it's going to get people to listen. And if he can get 2% of the people listening to agree with him, it's worth irritating or pissing off the other 98% who are never going to agree with him anyway. That's his kind of mindset. So by doing that, he's getting, I mean, I've seen people sharing the Stefan Molyneux's video 3 or 4 times now, and it's so bad, and he's such a horrible person, and people are not unironically sharing this and saying this is the reality of the situation, and I'm like, no, it's not. And that information just starts getting spread around, and people see it and they just go, well, I thought this was true. And then you have to fight and counter it. Now, for free speech, I'm all for it. Let's let him say what he wants to say, but I don't have to do business with him. I don't have to have him on the same platform I'm on if the owners of that platform don't want him on there. You know, it's how do you judge that, or how do you balance that? And that's the where it comes down to. As libertarians, we have to allow for free speech, but we also have to allow for us to be able to shame those people for that speech, just so that everybody knows what the rules of society are that we're agreeing to.
And there's a time to pick and choose your battles as well. You know, let me point out one of my favorite examples. Martin Luther King had the Rosa Parks demonstration planned way before Rosa Parks, right? Before that happened. This is something that I didn't know until I read some letters that he had written and was talking about it. They had two major incidents actually before Rosa Parks that Martin Luther King Jr. chose not to act on. One of them was, I remember one, I forget the other, and so I won't even guess, but then the other one was an unwed mother, right? And he said, look, here's the thing. I get that I feel for this person. She shouldn't be kicked off the bus just because she's an unwed mother. But I want the Christians to be a huge part of this rally. And so right now I'm just going to wait for the perfect moment to make my stand. And that was Rosa Parks. She was an elderly woman. She was somebody everybody had a little compassion for. And ultimately he said, yeah, this is when it's going to be. And that was successful versus fighting every single battle, even if the battle is right. Right. Like I might believe in free speech at all times, but I'm not going to exactly throw a big tantrum when Molyneux gets banned. I mean, he's an a-hole. He's a wrong a-hole. He's a dangerous a-hole and he's mean to people that I like. And so I'll let him fight that fight. I am going to fight the free speech battle in a battle that makes it so I can win. Right. My desire is to win, right? A world set free in my lifetime. That's what I want to see. If I keep fighting battles that create division, then I lose. And so now thankfully we're way past those Martin Luther King Jr. times. You hear unwed teenage mother and a bunch of people don't know if you're talking about black people or white people anymore, because we're all going through that. Mm-hmm. And so it's something that we now have more unity over that, but we still have these divisions. We want to pick and choose. You know, I know
still have welfare queens, and then you have, you know, the immigrants, those people.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, stuff still sticks around. That mindset just pervades for some reason through a certain group of people that I don't know how you ever get rid of it.
It's hard, you know, and this is something that you actually enlightened me on, and I did not know this part of the kind of Libertarian Party history. And I do want to talk about it a little more directly. I think we always refer to like Lou Rockwell. We hate him. Good economist, but we hate him. And I think a lot of people like me are like, wait, why? Like, I don't know what he did. Like, why? And I guess a big part of the Libertarian Party history was you had a lot of disenfranchised Republicans. And why were they disenfranchised? Now, I love to prey on disenfranchised Republican. I am an ex-Tea Party Republican who found my way to libertarianism, right? So for me, I hear that and I'm like, so what? Yes, let's appeal to the Republicans. Let's appeal to the anti-war Democrats. Let's do it. Here's the problem. It's the reason that you appeal to them. Now, the reason I had issues with the Republican Party is because they weren't inclusive enough. They kept growing the government. They kept spending more. I wanted to spend less. I wanted to hit budgets. I wanted to include everybody. I wanted to be tolerant. I wanted all these great things. The reason these Republicans were disenfranchised is because the Republican Party had, I think, twice in a row caved on amnesty, letting people who were here keep their immigration. And some prominent libertarians, including Lou Rockwell, I guess, made the pitch that we should take these disenfranchised Republicans that are mad that the GOP let the immigrants stay and make them libertarians. That is a tough thing, right? Because here's the thing.
It was something that Murray Rothbard called fusionism. Right. And he had written a series of articles. So there was a newsletter called the Rothbard Rockwell Report. And it was Lou Rockwell and Murray Rothbard, and they would write articles in this. And one of the ideas he hit upon was we should get with these disenfranchised Republicans, the old right, as it was known, because the neoconservatives were coming in and they were taking over and they were turning the conservative party into a liberal party, as they were looking at globalism, right? So these were people who were disenfranchised from that, but they did that with dog whistling, with saying, if you've heard about the newsletters from Ron Paul, Ron Paul was also in this group. Lou Rockwell was writing for Ron Paul. Ron Paul and Murray Rothbard and Lou Rockwell were trying to get Pat Buchanan elected in 92. Right. And Pat Buchanan is not
the libertarian superstar, right?
Yeah. He's not a good friend of mine. Let's put it that way. I don't really believe with a lot of what he says. So they were trying to push that. And that was why. So Ron Paul ran in 88 as a libertarian. And then he was going to run in 92 until they decided to go with Pat Buchanan. And then he stepped out of the race and backed Pat Buchanan. So these are people who were trying to, not because they were necessarily racist, but because they knew they could appeal to those people who were disenfranchised, get them into the party, and use them, was the thought process.
Now, here's the thing, guys. I don't want this to... Every time you talk about Ron Paul or kind of Lou Rockwell or Murray Rothbard in any kind of negative light, people think this is like us dumping on them. I think all three have made huge contributions, including Lou Rockwell, to the movement. I think if you take the economic side of Lou Rockwell, I think he has some good things to say. But it's like reading Hop. You can take like 90% of it and say it's great. And then when you talk about kicking gays and blacks out of your community, it's kind of like a hair in the salad, right? I mean, you're just like, most of it can be good, but if you're wrapping it up in this, like, that's just kind of I don't want to do that.
So Murray Rothbard was originally a leftist a bit. He was courting the left, right? He was trying to court disenfranchised liberals back in the 60s and 70s, right? So that was his kind of thing. He was always looking for ways to make an impact and try to get libertarianism out there. I think it was stated by somebody who knows him, who got on the bad side of him at one point, was that he was a great friend and a horrible enemy. You did not want him on your bad side. So he would create, you know, friendships and acquaintances and set up these deals, and then he would turn and somebody would irritate him and it would change the whole thing. And then he would be the worst enemy of those people. So that's where a lot of this fumbled into the 83 split, which I don't know how we're getting from Arbery to this conversation, but it's one of my favorite topics to talk about. And that really caused a problem in the Libertarian Party, where half of the party just got up and left. Right. And it's almost like every so often we have to go through that. And I think we're going through that again this year.
Yeah.
With some things that are going on that we can get into in a few minutes. But
yeah.
So the thing about him and the thing about Ron Paul was that they had their in areas of concern, which is mainly economics. They were concerned about economic space things and what can we do for individual rights and blah, 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 blah. Right. But when it came to other topics, they really didn't care. So they would surround themselves with people who aligned with them on those things and kind of didn't really care too much about those other things, like the social problems and the immigration and other topics that they kind of figured down whatever on. So they weren't interested in. And I think that's where a lot of that manipulation of the whole movement came from. That caused a huge split, and we're still fighting to this day.
Yeah. Well, and the direction I was going, and I do think it's important to talk about the history so we understand why are so many like ex-Confederate sympathizers kind of hanging on to the Liberty movement, you know, because there are a few what I'll call like Soviet sympathizers, but they are not prevalent, right? Because there was not really a mainstream attempt to get them on board, right? So this is why it's a little bit less of a problem that, you know, this racism problem is more of a problem for us than Soviet sympathizing, for example. So it's kind of why it's worth talking about. So I'm glad you went into the history. My thing is, look, I love Ron Paul. I have read Man, Economy, and State. It is a great book. It is one of those, if you need to understand economics better, great, get on to it. But like Reinhold said, that's not all of libertarianism is economics. It's an important part, but it is not the only part. And so when you are okay to put some things aside, for example, kicking people out of the country because they weren't born on your magic dirt, or right, you know, stoning gay people, and you're like, yeah, I can kind of see that. That's a strictly unlibertarian thing to believe. Right. So I can take your good and leave your bad if you're really good at it, but you should understand why some people don't have the reverence for Rothbard or Rockwell or Ron Paul that you might, because these certain things might have affected you more than others. It's not to make them bad people, I am sure. And this isn't a purity test. I have had, well, I've had impure libertarian thoughts. I'm sure. I mean, everybody's the only real libertarian according to themselves anyway.
Right. I mean, you've got the same thing with Ayn Rand. Ayn Rand was by all accounts, a terrible person. Robert Heinlein, who is one of my favorite authors and I think a big leader in libertarian thought and writing, there's accusations that he was a pedophile. Well, I don't know if there's true or not. I don't think they are, but there's the accusation. So whenever you bring them up, there's people who kind of throw that at you too. So everybody has flaws and nobody's perfect. That's the thing that irritates me is when people go, you can't question Ron Paul or you can't question Murray Rothbard or Luke Rockwell because they've done so much for libertarianism. And I'm like, I'm not saying that they haven't, but I'm also saying that they're human beings and I can disagree with them.
It would be one thing if we're having an economic discussion and you're saying, here's my problem. And then you're interjecting the immigrant thing in the middle of it. But oftentimes this comes up because we're talking about immigration and then Rockwell comes up and then it's like, okay, well now is an important time for me to say, this is the part where I disagree with. Now, if I spend 90% of my time talking about economics and ignoring immigration, then I am going to think Lou Rockwell is some kind of saint. I mean, this is just, it's a matter of how much the dog that you feed is the one that grows, right? That's the saying that, and this is what happens, like Ben Shapiro, right? Has a lot of libertarian leanings, a lot of them, but he spends, somebody did the math for me, 25% of his time talking about why it's important to call a trans person by their original pronoun on the paper. Right. When you spend 25% of your time talking about why you should be flatly wrong about a trans issue, then you're going to have a problem with being a bigot. Right. And people could say, but he's libertarian and all these other things, but he spends 90% of his time talking about this. Right. And so and that's the thing. He doesn't talk as much about the things that he might actually be a lot more libertarian on in the good things. Right. And so we don't get enough of his good. So, and so a lot of that comes to when we talk about this Arbery shooting, if you spend most of your time defending Confederates, defending shootings of unarmed Black people, defending that, then you are going to come off as a bigot. Because you spent all your time doing it. Yeah, you might be a libertarian and all these other things, but if you spend a certain amount of time saying there's no such thing as systemic racism, and that's my whole philosophy, right? I'm just going to go on and on and on about how there's no such thing as systemic racism. Okay, but you're going to suffer a problem with being a bigot.
Well, there's a lot of problems with definitions and what people are saying when they say things and what they mean. And when people hear systemic racism, they're like, well, I'm not a racist. I don't see the system as racist. It hasn't affected me negatively in any way. So I don't understand what you're talking about. We should be treating everybody as individuals, as equals, and move on. Why are we talking about this? We just quit talking about it. It'd go away. And it's not how it works. I am one of the most staunchest individualists that exists. But I also don't ignore the fact that there are people who are not individualists who will change, treat people differently because of those things that I personally don't care about. And I think matter in any way, but I recognize that these other people do feel that way. And just like the drug war was founded on the idea of keeping down Black people and hippies. Those are the words from Nixon, as we found out a few years back, that was why they came up with this idea of making marijuana illegal, not because it was hurting anybody,
right?
But because they wanted an excuse to go in and target those groups and keep them quiet because they were getting too uppity.
Right. And then you have the, And again, this is something you kind of can't separate race from. You have the CIA who finds these shipments of cocaine, lets the shipment of cocaine go through. Now, they could stop it right there, right? Oh, shipment of cocaine. Let's shut it down and bust all these, you know, important people that are selling it. Instead, what do? They wait for it to go through. They wait for it to get dispersed. And then they crack down on the people it got dispersed to. Right. So it's not just like the drug war is racist, right? We know that you know.
But it's not just that. So here's the other problem, too. So part of what the drug war did was they decided they were going to crack down on drugs and we're going to target the hippies and the black people. Right.
Yeah.
So they go to the inner cities and they start arresting people there. So now they're putting these people in jail and their families are growing up without dads, that sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. So they've created a statistical anomaly. Now we have this high number of black people who are committing these crimes. Oh, look, the black people are more criminal than the white people. When it's not the case, when you look at the actual information, it's not the case, but they're more likely to get arrested and put in jail than a white person will be. So it creates a false statistic that people start to reinforce, and by doing so, then they go, okay, we need to go look out for when the police then go out and say we're looking for the crime, they're going to go look there because that's where most of the crime is, because they're perpetuating that myth that and then they're basically creating that myth because they're putting so many people in that community in jail that the kids are getting raised by gangs, mm-hmm. instead of individual fathers and learning good morals. It's destroying that whole fabric, which makes the problems worse, which reinforces the numbers, which gives the excuse to go continue doing it. It's just an never-ending cycle that we need to break, and nobody wants to identify that is a cycle because they want to say we should just be individualists and we should just treat everybody equal. We should do that, but we're not. That's the problem.
Right. And this is, to put it in perspective, like, let's say you actually think that drugs are a problem, right? And that you think we should crack down on them. And indeed, I don't do any drugs myself because I think the biggest punishment for doing drugs is having done drugs and dealing with those effects. I don't know anybody who's on like superpowers while they're on LSD. I've seen some people think they are, but it doesn't exactly work out that way when they jump off the roof. But here's the thing. What's the most likely, you might even know off the top of your head, Reinhold, what's the most likely thing to kill you in the United States? Most thing you're most likely to die from just by being existent here in the United States.
I'm trying to remember what it was. It was, well, cancer.
Number one and two aren't very close or are close. The third one's way, way down. Cancer is number two. Heart disease is number one. Okay. Right. Now look, heart disease is because you ate too many burgers, fatty,
you didn't exercise enough,
sugary stuff, not enough exercise. Drugs, guys, I'm looking at like the top 10 list, not even there. All right. So as far as things that are like, if you actually care about people and you say, well, we do the drug war because I care about them, well, then you should ban burgers.
Yeah. Was McDonald's allowed to function, right?
Right.
They're killing people.
Right. You should, absolutely. Why is tobacco legal when cancer's got you at five, you know,
that getting close on that one. That's going to happen.
We're getting there. Right. But I'm saying like, this is what you should care of above like meth. Right, because the one is more likely to kill you than the other.
Mm-hmm. Well, right? The meth, you have a lot better weight management with meth, right?
Well, at least you took care of your heart disease problem. Don't do meth if you're listening to this. I don't want anybody doing meth.
For superhero powers, PCP. Yeah.
Okay, well, here it's bad advice time, guys. Steroids and creatine, guys. That's how I got shredded. But yeah, like, you know, if you're trying to be ideologically consistent and you just say, you know, I don't like drugs and I think they're harmful. Well, then you're not really looking at all the data. There's a million things that are more likely to harm you than drugs. It's like, I love this. I talked about breed specific legislation. You're more likely to get killed by an icicle falling on your head than a pit bull killing you. Are you going to ban icicles? Are you going to ban like overhanging roofs? No, of course not. That's stupid, right? And so we accept that there's just some things that you say there's a stigma around it that is misleading. And like I said, drugs are still bad, but it's one of those that's like, if we're going to throw everybody that has a bad idea in prison, then our prisons are, everybody's going to live in a prison, right?
And meanwhile, meanwhile, we end up getting to a point where somebody like my wife, who has to go through cancer and chemotherapy for years and could have had some alleviation of a lot of her symptoms by being able to smoke a stinking plant and is told she's not allowed to. I mean, where's the compassion in that?
Right.
Can I had a drug test once a bunch of years ago, and I kept wondering why the test hadn't come back from my employer. I'm like, why haven't you told me about the status of the test? I finally tracked somebody down, and he said, well, it's because there was a hit on the test, and we're looking into it. I'm like, well, what was it? He says, well, it could have been like poppy seeds or something like that. I'm like, yeah, but what is it that's causing you the heartburn? And he says, well, it could have been meth. And I'm like, look at me. There's no way anybody could look at this body and go, oh, yeah, he's doing meth.
Right. It's just not the way it goes, guys.
It's not how it works.
Yeah, We're Libertarians and endorses meth for weight loss. Thank you for recognizing that. Look, we just need to be intellectually honest.
Well, Adderall is meth.
Well, there you go. Specific kind of meth. You know, we have to be intellectually honest when we talk about these things. And it's hard because I think we don't want to recognize that they're true because we don't feel that we act that way. But it doesn't mean that everybody else isn't. Let me give you one more example just before we touch off of systemic racism, because I know you're really eager to talk about Libertarian Party and LNC stuff, right? But before we get off of this, there was a test done once where they had two identical applications submitted to various restaurants, right? And one of them, just the person had a very ethnic sounding black name, and the other one had a very white sounding name. And the one got called back like four times more than the black one. And now here's the thing. Maybe even you genuinely don't think that you would do this. You just say, I am not that kind of person. I wouldn't be this. That you might be in the minority. And that's what systemic is. You might be the exception, but the rule is something else. And it's hard. It is hard to accept because you don't want to think that you would behave that way. Sorry, go ahead.
There's a lot of reasons why there's a lot of black families and a lot of immigrant families who have last names like Jefferson, Washington, you know, white sounding names, because they ran into so many. I mean, how many people who come over as immigrants have changed their name? I know my wife's family changed their names when they came over from wherever. I think they were in Eastern Europe in the 20s or whatever. When they came over, they changed their name to sound more American so that they wouldn't be stigmatized just by that name choice. And there, like I said, there's been studies, like you said, where they've had the exact same person applying for housing or jobs, and all they did was send in a different name on the resume, and the other names would be the ones that always get called back. The Trump was famously in trouble for that twice, he didn't want Section 8 housing in his apartment. So he had instructed and that's the accusation. But they know that the manager would be marking applications that were black separately so that they could be identified and pulled out of a list.
Right. So stuff like this. And here's the thing. When we talk about a system, these aren't just exceptions. And let's go back to Arbery. Just wrap up Arbery real quick. There was a bunch of things, and you just want to say, okay, that was one individual. That's one individual. That's one individual. When they're all in conjunction with each other, that's when you get a system. The thing is, you had the 911 caller. You had the McMichaels who shot him down. You had the prosecutor who covered for them to shoot him down. And you had the local media saying that he deserved to die. So that is a system. Those are four different entities. They didn't really like know each other or whatever. And they all worked in conjunction to have this happen against this black man. Now, if the shooters were immigrants, would the same thing have happened? If this jogger was white, would the same thing have happened? No. I mean, it's just blatantly, even according to the 911's own words, right? 911 caller's words. He said there's a black. The problem is that he's black, right? That's the issue. Would they be digging through these? I mean, they always dig through these criminal histories. This always happens when they shot that one guy inside of his house, right? Oh, it was an accident. He did have marijuana in his house, though. Yeah, that's really important for us to know. Thank you. Like, because that was, I killed the guy in his own house, but he did have weed. I mean, when you're going to, it's just a matter of damaging somebody's reputation. And this is the system that we have, right?
Yeah, and it's still partly kind of racial, systemic racism, but it's also partially just the notion that police feel that they can act the way they think they can act. You look at some of the, there's instances where white people were killed this way too, right? So they may not be making the news as much, but you had the Kelly, who was kind of mentally challenged a little bit, and he was beaten to death by police. We had a woman who she had just come back from prison, and she was going home, and there was an argument in the street, probably because whether she wanted, she should be there or not or whatever. So the police showed up, a dog came out. The policeman immediately got scared and pulled the gun out to shoot the dog, slipped on ice and killed the woman. Right. So it's a lot of bad training by police. It's a lot of police thinking that they have the right to do this stuff. So it's just the horribleness of the police force. And then you add on top of that, the reinforced systemic racism that just keeps cycling through the system. And that just makes things worse.
Right. So guys, even if you don't find any of this compelling, even if you just say, you know, I still am not sold on systemic racism, just first of all, keep your eyes open, keep your ears open, and you'll start seeing it. But even if, you know, I don't convince you now, let's just say the whole system needs to be fixed, right? Even if you don't want to fix it because of race, you do want to fix it, right? Ultimately, we shouldn't have shot down joggers and people dying in their own homes. And this is just, you can unite with these people to fix the system, even if you're not sold on it. I again, you and I think Reinholder are of the same mind. I think most of the We Are Libertarians podcast, maybe aside from Tad, recognizes that there's some issues here. But even Tad would want the criminal justice system reformed so that even the illusion of racism shouldn't exist, right? Even the idea, you can make it so that that is just totally gone by having more transparency, by having de-escalation techniques, by treating everybody equally, by having those body cams always up and functioning, right? Just a whole bunch of different
things. Such a horrible.
Isn't that weird?
It's such a bad technology, apparently, that they just keep getting turned off and not working.
It's weird because every private citizen with a GoPro, it always seems to work just fine. But, you know, something about the police. It's
a bad batch to manufacture, maybe.
Yeah, maybe the police are just always getting the bad batches. Maybe
that person that did that batch was on meth that day or something.
maybe we should keep it illegal after all. All right, anyway. All right, well, let's get into some Libertarian Party stuff. Guys, today has reinforced more than ever why being a Libertarian does not necessarily mean you are a registered party Libertarian. I am of that category. I believe I've paid all my dues, but I'm not actively involved with the Libertarian Party. That being said, it's very public and you can always see what's going on with them. And so I always, of course, because when you talk about libertarianism, look, let's not beat around the bush here. People pay attention to politics usually once every 4 years, and we're in one of those fourth years. And so a lot of people are paying attention to us who didn't pay attention before. And when they hear libertarian, they think, oh, who's the last? Oh, Gary Johnson, right? That's the first libertarian that comes into most non-libertarian people's minds, because that's who our last presidential candidate was, right? And so now when, you know, it looks like, and honestly, I think it's inevitable, but Justin Amash is coming, and we say, okay, well, that's the people who people are going to know for a little bit. You know, this is whoever gets the nomination. And so people care about this process once every 4 years. We have a lot of eyes on us and we want to make sure that process goes smoothly. That process of selecting anything right now is not going smoothly at all. And you've probably had the most vocal person about it, Reinhold, on here.
To the point where everybody's telling me to shut the hell up.
But it's important to talk about, because this is something that we need to get with the, you know, we need to get the first world, but I want to have all the details out here first. I'll be the detail guy, but I think you've seen a lot of just what's going on here. Now, this is something even I'm paying attention to this year, because it's the first time. Reinhold, you actually regularly kind of watch some of the the meetings and the emails and everything that goes forward. They're public. I haven't paid attention until this year. I've just kind of said, you know what, let's whatever. And then I was like, you know, let's see how this process is going. And you know what? COVID-19 is shaking things up. So we might not be able to have a physical convention, or maybe we will, you know, but either way, it's getting really ugly. So let's start with step one. We were going to meet in Austin. That's not happening now. Why is Austin no longer happening? Well, there's a little COVID-19 crisis going on right now. And we aren't, now I believe in Austin, we're not legally allowed to meet, right? Or in Texas, right?
Texas, they're opening Texas back up. I think large groups are still illegal. So they had to kind of cancel. They made the decision a couple weeks ago to cancel the convention at that date and time, and they gave themselves 10 days. And we talked about this, talked about it with Chris before, but they gave themselves like 10 days to come up with a new location and place that we would have the convention, right? They came back in 6 days later, on the next weekend. They came back 7 days later, and in a long, grueling 8.5 hour meeting that I watched every minute of, they finally came to the conclusion that that Robert's rules dictates that the interpretation of place means a physical location. Therefore, that applies to the bylaws. Therefore, the bylaws then limit the fact that we can have an online convention. So therefore, it has to be on site.
So it has to be a physical place.
That's the interpretation that was made, even though there were other people who also are very big in Robert's rules who disagree with that interpretation. But the people who believe in the one interpretation were larger number on the LNC than the people who had the other interpretation.
Let's go on this for a little bit. Is a place a place? Is meeting online a place?
What do you define as a place? So if you say, okay, a place is a physical location, I'm like, great. We are going to meet in the country of United States. That's a place. Mm-hmm. We are going to facilitate that meeting in this large place by using internet connectivity to make sure that we can communicate more effectively.
Right? So theoretically, you and I could meet in a place online. That place, though, would be wherever the server is, right? Like wherever. So well, we'd be meeting.
Depending on how you want to look at it that way. You know, I mean, we could be meeting at a place on a server. We could be meeting in a place, and the fact that our two physical locations are still within the confines of what you could define as a place.
Right.
Right. You could say the planet is a place, you know, and they just say that you existing there. So if we go to a physical convention, they put up a big screen and they have cameras and you can watch what's going on because there's so many people, you can watch what's going on that screen. Well, that's using technology to help facilitate the meeting. Mm-hmm. You have microphones to help facilitate the meeting. Why is a microphone any different because it's 150 feet away from the speaker or the chair, as opposed to 150 miles from the chair?
Right.
It's going to work just fine.
Technology either way. Yeah. But
there are people who say, no, it's got to be in position. And their position is that they think people should be able to speak up and say and raise their arms and wave and say, I need to be paid attention to because I have a privileged motion, or you're doing something wrong and we're all upset about it. And, you know, have them pounding the tables and making noise so that the person who's doing the wrong thing, if the chair is doing something that they don't like or agree with, instead of doing what normally happens, is where we have a vote about that. Do you agree with the ruling? That's why we try not to have rowdy conventions. We normally don't have that rowdy of a convention, right? Is because that's, we all keep order in doing that. And why that would change either this year or because we're online, I don't know, but that's the fear. And really what's going on now is the party's kind of tearing itself apart because there are people who want to block innovation and there are people who want to move forward with innovation. Instead of seeing a problem they see how can we solve the problem. So there's those people. Then there are people who say this is a problem, and you're solving that problem is a bigger problem than the original problem.
Right. And I want to, I don't want to straw man anybody here, but I just, I'm with you as far as moving forward. I just think, you know, to try and present their arguments in the best light. Yeah. When you have a bunch of people on a Zoom call, you're going to have to mute them, and you can't allow for everybody booing and cheering all at once. Right. Because then it would just, I mean, you wouldn't be able to hear anything. Right. At least when you've got a microphone.
It changes the dynamic, and it also changes. So right now we have conventions that are in physical locations that take time to get there and money to get there, and people buy packages, and it's a big party. And that's how we do a lot of raising of funds. And that's where a lot of this concern comes in too. But we do that with the understanding that the people who maybe are better delegates aren't able to attend those meetings. They're disenfranchised from doing that. They can't be delegates because they're not going to go to, you know, seven states away and take the weekend off and be able to get off work and have the money to pay for it and all of that stuff. Right. So those people are disenfranchised. So now people are upset that, well, if you have an online convention, the people who don't have good computer skills or understand how computers work or even have a connection, they're going to be disenfranchised. So somebody's getting screwed somewhere either way. So, and what Nathan's saying is something I really wanted to touch on is that we are trying to convince the people of the United States that private organizations are the most effective way to run things instead of having a government body doing it, because the private organization is more agile, responds better to what's going on around it, can make decisions quicker, and can do it in a way that everybody's opinions is respected, and it's a better solution. That's been our whole spiel for decades. And when push comes to shove, we have proven that that isn't true just by looking at what the LNC is doing.
Right. And this is, it really is about innovation and moving forward. And I understand that there's some security and bylaws, but there's also a time when laws need to change. I think this is the perfect example. We as libertarians understand laws are bad arbiters of the right thing to do, right? We say this all the time.
You can never have a law that perfectly covers every eventual situation that you may run into, and you have to be able to change and do things. Thomas Jefferson violated the Constitution, right? When he bought the Louisiana Purchase, he is not authorized to do that, but he was given a 3-day deadline or whatever, and he said, "Here's the deal," and it was a great deal. So he said, "I'm going to do it. It's going to be unconstitutional, and they can kick me out for it if they do, but I'm going to do what's the right thing." And some people think that the right thing is adhering to the rules to a point where it prevents the party from getting their presidential and vice presidential nominations on the books and accepted by all the states so they can get on the ballot in all 50 states by waiting until this pandemic is over, which they think miraculously is going to happen in July, apparently. And then we'll all be able to meet and everything be great. And that won't cause a problem at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is the argument I got in today that's really been frustrating is that, okay, so, and this is really inside baseball, and you guys may not want to hear about this, but the biggest problem that the heartache that the LNC has is they're upset because they think that the chair, Nick Sarwark, is trying to push for an online convention, right? So he thinks he's making moves behind the scenes, and he may very well be. I'm not saying he's not, but everybody in this whole situation is doing what they think is best, right? So that's part of the problem. So there's no real bad actors on that end, although there are some, I think, that are trying to manipulate the system, but for political gain. But there are people who are really just doing what they think is right. So they feel that he's overstepping his bounds, and he's trying to push for an online convention. So they're trying to limit the choice of signing the contract for having the convention in July, because in 2 weeks we have this agreement where we're going to get together and we're going to vote for the president and vice president. So that was a compromise that was made between the different factions on the LNC, that we would do a limited online convention. It has to be called a convention because it has to be voted, but it has to be ratified at a physical later, but that's legalese. So that's what they come up with. So they're complaining that he's trying to overstep his bounds. So what they wanted to do was tell him he had to sign the contract, even though we were going to meet in 2 weeks, and they haven't given him the contract yet. And he said he wasn't going to sign it. Now they're saying that he's not going to sign it because he wants to remove any incentive for the body who meets online to go forward with the physical convention. If there's no signed contract, then they may be more apt to choose doing a whole online convention than they would be if it was signed and they were locked into that money. Right. Sure. But then at that point, the LNC is now limiting choices for the delegates. Right. Yeah. So they're trying to tell the delegates what they can and can't vote for. And then the states. So then they had a couple test runs of how they're going to try to do the online convention. There were a few hiccups and problems. I'm not going to say there weren't. There were some issues, but they're trying to work through them. But because of those issues, then we had those people who originally didn't want to have an online convention started saying that they wanted to rescind that agreement, put together a motion, going to send that agreement, and they're voting on that now to basically take away the online option, not have the meeting next weekend, and continue on with just the July 1. And there's support for it. Right now it's, a 4-3 vote, and there's been 4 sponsors to it. Yeah. So we've got sponsors and 4 co-sponsors. So I think we're going to get 5 votes there. It's already 4-3, right? And they're taking their time and they're going to vote for it like on Wednesday. It's going to be the final of the vote. And they may decide right then that, oh, we're not doing the Friday night convention after everybody's put together the work to do it. So the states got together, about 20 or so state chairs got together and spent hours on Zoom trying to put together a proclamation with all the whereases and everything else that goes into the flowery things. It's kind of annoying sometimes.
It's awful.
But they basically said that these are the things we want to see in an online convention. You have to respect this. You have to respect that. You know, if somebody's trying to make a privilege motion, there's got to be a way to see it. There's got to be visibility on what the list is of people who are up to speak next. Right. So there are some options where that can be turned on and turned off. So they're saying that these options have to be in place for us to consider this legitimate and to ratify it. But then they get a little farther and said that we want to tell our delegates to respect the agreement and not vote on certain things at this online convention and leave it to the physical one. And then they're going to tell the delegates who go to the physical that they should honor the decisions that were made at the online convention, right? So that now you've got the state chairs trying to tell the delegates how they should vote. They're not telling them they have to vote that way, but they're giving suggestions and they're trying to urge people to vote a certain way. And it's like, guys, once that gavel hits and the body votes, you don't get a better representation of what the party wants to have done than when you have 1,000 people making that decision, not 15 people on an LNC or however many there is right now, and not 20 chairs, right? 1,000 people are going to be deciding this and discussing it. Respect their decision and let them figure it out. They've had all this time to go back and forth and argue and fight and act like children for months, and they won't give the 1,000 delegates a couple days to kind of figure out what they want to do.
Yeah, I don't trust Nick Sarwark at all. Me personally, this is not the Weird Libertarians podcast. There's some people who experience a great relationship with Nick. I know that we had some of our guys meet with him. So this is my personal point of view. When I heard the accusations this week that Nick was doing deceitful things and trying to strong arm people and abusing his power, I messaged everybody that I could. There was a couple who didn't have social media convenient to me, or at least any way that I managed to find them. Right. But I messaged them all and I said, you know, how many of you, you know, do you feel, just between you and me anonymously, do you feel like Nick tried to strong arm you or deceive you? And over half of them said, yes. Here's the problem though. As much as I dislike Nick for being that way, being pushy, I do think he's probably doing it because he feels it's best for the Libertarian Party. And these guys also have motives as well. Right now, of among the people that said yes, a lot of them were actually in agreement with him on this particular subject that we're talking about right now. A lot of them, they just said it was about something else that happened, that he flexed his power, said, you know, I'll make sure you never work for the LNC again or something like that, you know. And I know I had a couple specifically say that he might have just been drunk and joking around, and some people took it seriously. I know there have been some floating around drinking problems. I've never seen Nick that I knew drunk, but apparently he is more drunk. He is drunk more often than I know, at least according to the people. I don't know. I don't want this to turn into the reason why
he's not running again.
I don't want this to turn into Nick's Sarwick drama. Truthfully, no,
here's the thing about Nick. Yeah. Before you go forward, he's trying to push the party into a more big boy party, as it were, as he sees it. And I understand what he's trying to do, and I fully understand that he might be doing some of these things and strong arming people and being a tyrant, as it were. But when it comes to honoring what the delegates want, right, and respecting what the delegates decide, he may disagree with them. He may vehemently say it's a wrong thing to do, but he will always side with the delegates' choice. He will never try to override the will of the body itself.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like I've never seen that, is what I'm saying. If there's been times where there's been one individual who is just like trying to keep making a point, and he would say, "Read the room. The room is saying they want this to happen. Won't you be quiet and go do that?" But he doesn't tell them they can't. He tries to give little hints and prods and says, "You know, well, what's going on?" But it's always at the expense of what is the body saying right now? What does it look like the body wants right now? When he's running those meetings.
Ultimately, we could have a robot run it if we didn't want his point of view. And so
if we were just following the Robert's Rules of Order, we could just have an AI doing that, right? We don't need people who are reading those, you know, well, this is going through this rule and this is not going through this rule. Think about what's going on, and that rule might just not be valid at this point. There was no belief that this was going to be an issue, and there wasn't anything written for it. So we have to kind of think on our feet a little bit and think about what the spirit of what the bylaws say and what the best thing for the body is, and make those decisions.
Yeah. I just think he's a guy that's under a tremendous amount of pressure. And I would cite a lot of his missteps towards feeling that pressure, is I guess what I would say. And again, I have been hard on him. I'm probably harder than anybody in the chat on him as far as the Real Libertarians guys go. But I think they're legitimate mistakes that he's made with people that I trust and good people. And I think I don't like to see it when somebody feels bullied into doing the wrong thing. And there's some of them that had said, I am sorry. Oh, the
Jody robot. Wheeler. Yeah.
By lawyer.
That deserves it.
Yeah. You know, but, and so I think that they're in a tough situation. And here's the thing with the bylaws. Like, here's the thing. There are personal laws that we make up, mm-hmm. right? Just so, like, if you're a business and you say, here's how we're going to run our business. Now, here's the thing. You could adhere to, let's say, Blockbuster's bylaws and say, nope, I see nothing in here about our rules of how we conduct our business that says we're going to take advantage of the internet age. So we are going to stick to video, VHS cassettes, and never upgrade to DVD or streaming or online or anything. What happened to Blockbuster? They closed their doors. They went out of business, right? There comes a time when you need to look at these things and say, is this helpful or hurtful to us right now? I understand the spirit of the guideline. Maybe it's security. These are all things that we should consider, and you talked about it for a little bit. We do want to know who's speaking. We do want to know objections. We do want to know all these things. And these are things that we can flesh out with an online convention. Maybe it's not possible, but at least let us explore. To say that I want to make sure that the vote is secure is a legitimate concern. But let's explore how we can make that possible instead of why it's impossible and so we're never even going to try. And we just need to meet physically in a place, even though it's probably going to lose us ballot access on many states, including mine here in Utah, and why it's not going to work out and why a lot of people won't be able to travel for it, into a place that, I mean, they've talked about Orlando. And here's the thing about all this right now with COVID-19 going around. Most of these rollouts are kind of at the discretion of the governor or the mayor or wherever it may be. And it's, they're getting extended a lot by saying like, well, I thought we'd be at less cases. Right now we're kind of adding an even amount of cases every day. I'd love to think we're on the other end of the curve right now, guys. But if you look at the graphs in the United States, it's, we have the same amount of new cases every day, pretty much. Okay. So we're not on the other end yet. And so what does a governor see? Well, if I let this convention go through and people get sick, they're going to blame me. So there's no way. And so what they're doing is now, I mean, this is the problem with Austin, is we held out for a long time, hoping that Texas would rescind its order or be done with it. And it turns out they're not. And so now we say Orlando. And just recently, it's not through our hypothetical convention day, but the governor there has just extended it again. And he could extend it again. And then what happens? Now we still don't have a presidential nominee, vice presidential nominee, new chair, new vice chair, none of that stuff, right? And we're still just going to sit there waiting while everybody else, what are they going to be doing? They're going to be talking about debates. They're going to be talking about how, you know, they're going to be campaigning. And what are we doing? We still don't know who the guy we're sending up is that's supposed to be campaigning.
And look at this too. We got the Constitution Party had theirs online. The Green Party is going to have theirs online.
Yep.
We had the State Party of Utah for Republican, right? They had theirs online, and they have more delegates there than we do, and it worked fine for them. The House just announced that they're going to do remote voting for House of Representatives, right? So everybody's putting these things in motion and making it happen, and there are companies who have been doing this for so long with stockholder meetings that are online because it was just so hard to get everybody in a physical place for stockholder meetings. The shell infrastructure of all this is there already. This isn't rocket science. And if we had looked at this as an option, it is my understanding that the COC had committee had a bid in hand from the people who did the GOP convention to make ours work, and it was never presented because it was not considered valid because we couldn't do it because of the bylaws. So they just kept it. They kept sitting on it. The first person I saw in the LNC, Stephen, the first person I saw in the LNC who even mentioned that we need to do something and brought forward an idea back in March, made the suggestion that we just, for the president and vice president, we just ask the state chairs to get a list of their delegates and then send that information to the LNC. They would tally up the votes, the secretary would tally them, and then that would be the selection, right? Then if they need to go to a second round or a third round, they could do that. But each state would be able to get that information easier than trying to do it in a one big group, right? So that was an option that was put out there, and it was just ignored for the most part. And they kind of hemmed and hawed for a couple months. And now they're trying to go, oh, we need to do something. And it's too late. I mean, I am all for them doing this online convention, but I've been in those tests, and I think they work okay, and I think they would probably be okay, but I also know that there's going to be people who complain about it because this isn't right, and that's not right, and they're going to throw a fuss and try to get things put in place that they don't, you know, they want to make it fail. So right. There's going to be that. So you have to make it rock solid, and you just don't have time to do.
No, the conspiracy, of course, is that basically you don't want Justin Amash to face real criticism or pushback, right? He joined late. Look, and I'm going to be blatant about this too. We targeted Justin Amash. Again, I think Nick did it for a good reason, but it was very excessive and obvious. Even a year ago, we were talking about how we had to file a form here on We're Libertarians to get our debates shared. And I don't know what happened. I actually filed the form, but they'll retweet the Church of Satan like that. You know what I mean? Like, no problem. And so what happened is they'll retweet Justin Amash stuff. And then we're like, okay, well, how about maybe some people who are also in the Libertarian Party? I'm not saying you can't tweet outside the Libertarian Party, but share our stuff too. It was very blatant. It was very one-sided. They got called out for it. They've been doing it for a long time. They finally got what they wanted. Justin Amash joined and is running for president. It's obvious they were targeting it to me. If you disagree, anybody out there, come at me, bro. I think it was very blatant. We were even talking about this a year ago.
So. I'm not saying it. I'm not saying you're wrong. What I'm going to say is that Justin Amash is not the only person they targeted. They've been targeting other people too. They've been working. I mean, this is something Nick has said for a long time, that he goes and talks to these people and tries to convince them to join the party. He's talked to Massey. Sure. He's talked to Rand. I know he's talked to these people, and he's tried to convince them to do this. And Justin finally bit. I mean, he was in a position where I think it made sense for him to do it. The party had changed. He was not a Republican anymore. It was very obvious that he wasn't. So when he left to become an independent because he wanted to try and put some separation from during his Senate run, you know, or House run to get back in the House, he was actually still up in fundraising and kind of in the polling. And then he decided that he would rather join the Libertarian Party and run as Libertarian, but he took some time to get there, right? He still got to think about it. And I think he was doing it for maximum effect of media attention because he's a smart politician. And that's part of the thing that's missing a lot in the Libertarian Party is some smart politicians going on, right? So, and some political acumen, as it were. So.
When you are an agent for a promising NFL star that you know is going to go in the top 10, what's your advice when the combine comes around? Don't participate. Mm-hmm. Don't play. You can only hurt yourself. Right. And so it's the thing for Justin Amash. When you know that you can get the Libertarian nomination pretty easily, yeah, don't hurt yourself. Don't play. Don't go to the debates. Don't do anything you don't have to do. Right. And so the argument then is that in kind of this convention becomes the one time where we actually say, okay, you have to sit here and you have to debate and you have to listen to the delegates. Now, to Justin Amash's credit, he's debating anyway right now.
Yeah.
He's going through ours. You're going to hear him on this network tomorrow, working with Matt Welch of Reason right here on the Weird Libertarians Network, guys. We're really excited for that. We're becoming big boys. It's really awesome. I mean, yeah. Chris has done a lot of work and knowing these guys.
I guess he's turned down Lines of Liberty.
Okay.
But I think there might be a conflict that's why he did that. I don't know. But I know that they're kind of like, hey, we should do our debates. And and I think he's trying to do as many as he can. I remember when they were doing the AMA, when Chris was hosting with Chrissy on the Chrissy and Jess show. Somebody, it was one of the LNC members called in. I can't remember his name now. But he called in and said, hey, I represent a region and my region would love to have a town hall with you. And he said, yeah, we should do that. Put it together. And we talked to him afterwards in the little Zoom meetup after. Mm-hmm. And he said that they had the campaign had already got with him and was working to set it up.
Oh, nice.
They were acting on this stuff right away.
Right. And so I don't want to say, look, Justin Amash was not my first choice for president. He was most people's first choice for president in our fan club, but that's neither here nor there. Either way, I understand the tactic. I want to stress that I still love Justin Amash. I might have loved somebody else more, but I still love Justin Amash. And I think he will do us proud to put forward. Right.
I mean, you've endorsed somebody else. I mean, that's completely fine.
And right.
We're individuals here, you know, individualists. So, yeah, the people you want to endorse, you can endorse whoever you want. I personally haven't technically made up my mind on that. I mean, I'm still of a different thoughts processes, but.
Right. I got Berman. Dale's got the Jacob Hornberger. Chris is, I mean, he's fanboying. He's doing well, even toning it down, but he's very excited about Justin Amash.
Well, that's the thing. It just does bring some excitement to people who have been wanting to see the party move forward and not regress back. So there's an old argument about this that we've had this fight for years and years about what type of presidential candidate we should run. And like I said, it was part of what happened in 1983. It caused the split. It was a combination of that and the other thing we were talking about kind of pulling together at the same time. And there's also some personal animosity that happened to the two groups' leaders that factored in, unfortunately, too.
Sure.
But, you know, that's an exciting thing to say, even if you're not excited about him being the presidential candidate or running for office, he made the choice to run while he was a sitting congressman. That's the first time it's happened. That's a big, huge deal and a big milestone that the Libertarian Party has been looking for years.
Yeah.
And it's just like another step, right? We were kind of hovering at 1% with the run in 1980. We kind of hit close to 1%, and then we were down below it. And then Gary Johnson came in and he got 1%. Then he ran again. He got 3%. We're seeing that uptick. We're seeing some movement. We're seeing getting media's talking about us, right? So we're getting some attention. We're getting more people coming to the party. This kind of helps propel that and reinforce that going forward. And I think a lot of people want to see that momentum continue. That's why they're going to look to Justin and say, okay, warts and all, You know, he may not be the perfect libertarian, but he's a libertarian, you know, and he has been consistently for 10 years that we know of. So I think that's what's going to end up kind of pushing that day through.
Sure. I mean, we might as well get into it since we're talking about it now. But just as far as Justin Amash, there's a lot of questions going on right now as far as Dems we would target, Tulsi's
anti-war. Oh, Tulsi, yeah. I mean, there's been, I can guarantee you that they've talked to Democrats too. Right. So don't think that they're just going after Republicans. Right. So they've talked to some Democrats. There are some good Democrats in there that have libertarian leanings that we could work with and talk to and maybe get convinced. I mean, Chaffee, or, you know, I can't remember how to pronounce it. Chaffee. Yeah. He was a Democrat for one time. You know, I mean, those are people we kind of want to work with. And
Yeah, here's the thing. And Justin Amash, look, he has some problematic votes. We had a debate. If you want to see what those are, please watch the debate between Brian Ellison and Brian Ellison and Brian Nichols we had here on the network. It was a fantastic debate. They both did a great job portraying why you would love / hate to have Justin Amash be your representative. They did better than anything I could even bring up here. They covered it all. But here's the bottom line, since we're talking about it. Amash has voted the conservative way many times. There are some things he's still kind of conservative about, right? But these are exceptions to his general rule of being a libertarian. When you looked at another interview I'll point out was Tulsi Gabbard when she interviewed with John Stossel. I love John Stossel, big fan. But he talked about, and really their one area of disagreement was schools. But here's the thing, if Tulsi Gabbard becomes a libertarian and says, you know what, instead of having somebody else pay for your schools, let's just deregulate schools and have them become free. Would you still have an issue with Tulsi Gabbard? Probably a lot less, right? And you would still want some of these past stances of hers to be reconciled and become more libertarian. I get it, right? I definitely understand the idea of putting the prostitute on the pulpit, right? We want to lead with maybe some people that are more libertarian and have been libertarian for a long time, but these are the people with the star power, right? They got the cards and these are the celebrities.
Yeah. So what's the advantage of having somebody on the pulpit who is the ideal libertarian, which doesn't exist. I'm sorry to say there's no such thing as an ideal libertarian because every libertarian is going to be a little bit different. Everybody's going to think a little different. So what you may think is perfect and unblemished libertarianism, I might have find problems with. Right. So I find that thought process and term a little bit off, but even if we're going to go someone hugely principled and been in the party for years, if he gets on that stage, as it were, and nobody goes to look at him and he gets no press and nobody hears anything he has to say, what have we gained? Right. This has happened before. We've had people like that run for president and basically be ignored completely. Right. We had a couple years ago, right before Barr, and before, Johnson, there was, gentleman that ran and he got arrested at one of the debates because they wouldn't let him in the debate. Him and the Green Party candidate got arrested. That was the only news from his campaign other than the fact that he was mocked for saying that he doesn't have a driver's license. Right. So he got mocked for not having a driver's license and he got arrested in a debate and his name came forth in the discussion of presidential candidates. The Green Party got higher press than he did.
Right.
Right. And we actually came in fourth that year in the votes. So it's like, you're not proving to me the case that that's the best way to go when you can look at history and see that it's not worked. Now, didn't work with Barr. Barr was a complete failure. I own that completely as far as the pragmatic side of things. I accept that completely. He was horrible. And Wayne Root, I mean, don't even get me started on that nutshell. But, Gary Johnson was a success, and it's like people are trying to say he wasn't. I'm like, guys, look at our history. It's all documented and out there. You can see what the vote totals were for every year and who ran, and you can go look up what they stood for and what they talked about, and you can see what happened.
Right.
This is empirical evidence.
Ryan wrote a great article that said, I think it was the Libertarian Party is for winning. Look, this is the political body of libertarianism,
Yeah.
This is the capital L party. I totally understand. I'm more of a small L libertarian than a big L libertarian. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I think my dues are going through because I have them on auto pay, but I haven't. I'm not going to be a delegate. I'm not showing up to meetings. I do hang out with my local guys because my county guys are actually really cool and I have a good friendship with them. But I'm not. I understand that my work is not in this area. My work is media. My work is my family, my community service. That's how I am spreading liberty. I have decided not to go the political route. That being said, if you do go the political route, then the Libertarian Party is probably for winning elections. So as opposed to putting forth the purest Libertarian candidate, you need to put forth somebody who you think has a legitimate shot to win, or at least expand your chance of winning next time. And I think that that's a good point. He said it, and I kind of thought about it for a little bit, and I was like, that does make a lot more sense, because I am very much... I'm not a purist, but I definitely am concerned when somebody puts up a bunch of things that might be pro-border or support the Defense of Marriage Act or something like that. Oh, yeah. I kind of go, like, because I feel like we do kind of drift too far right, and I'm very eager to have somebody who can pull from the left. And that's coming from somebody who used to be right myself. I just think that we need that kind of a little more balance. I'm sick of kind of seeing the ex-Republican that with libertarian leanings. I kind of wouldn't mind an ex-Democrat with Democratic leanings try, you know, like just to do it, just to mix it up a little bit, just to get some more people. But again, that's not my fight. So my argument, I invalidate myself from the argument willfully, because if I cared, well, then I would step it up and I'd show up and I'd put in the work. You know, somebody said, I think it was Ethan Bishop Henchman, don't threaten to leave, threaten to stay, yeah. Right? If I believe that this Libertarian Party thing, this politics thing could be won, I would still be participating in it. Now, I've pulled the plug on it. That being said, I don't want to discourage anybody who thinks that they can win this way, to think that this is the way to go.
Here's the thing that people don't get. A lot of people don't get. I'm sorry. I'm not going to say everybody. What we're doing in these campaigns and these elections and getting 3% and getting 4% may sound like we're accomplishing nothing and not winning, but we are actually swing elections. We are becoming the people who that if you want to win, you have to court. The Democrats have their base that are always going to vote Democrat. The Republicans have their base that are always going to vote Republican. They're fighting for that middle ground, and we are becoming a huge chunk of that middle ground. So they're going to have to start modifying the things that they stand for, because these parties shift and change all the time on their stances. Nobody who really looks is going to say a Democrat is always a Democrat and a Republican is always a Republican. I mean, it's not happening. So they will adopt what we're saying. Look at how much adoption of marijuana legalization has come in the past 4 years, maybe 8 years, since Gary Johnson was running as a Libertarian candidate. It got information out. It got as a part of the conversation. People said, oh, in order to get these guys, maybe I should go and get some of these ideas over, some that we're more tolerable with, and get them moved over. We were for equal marriage, you know, marriage equality. We were for marriage equality 20 years before the Democrats were. They didn't become a party of marriage equality until 2012. And to say that we don't have a part in that, and what we've done politically hasn't been part of that equation, is just burying your head in the sand. We have made incredible strides, even though we lose, in shaping the debate and getting our message out there to affect the other parties and get actual liberty trying to get in there. So we're seeing some benefit of that. Now we're still going backwards in other areas, and we're trying to do what we can. But I think as people see, if you start showing people success, if you start showing people that your plans work, so if you say, okay, we were for legalization of marijuana, we're for same-sex marriage, marriage equality, and those things now have passed, and they're part of the culture, and it's a success, and people agree that this is the right thing, and yeah, I think this is the right thing. Well, maybe some of these other ideas that these libertarians have or might be good. Let's think about them, and we can get some of the more, you know, further along ideas, get them implemented, prove that they work, get some more ideas in, prove that they work. You prove to people that things work, you're going to make a lot more inroads in getting them to support you next time around.
Right. Look how many people came to us because of Ron Paul that don't agree with, I mean, we already talked about it, but don't agree with Ron Paul on some things. Look at people that came in because of Gary Johnson. I mean, Larry Sharp is one of my, I think he is probably the best speaker in the Libertarian Party, maybe even Liberty Movement at large. I think he's the best, most eloquent speaker. And he came in because of Gary Johnson. Now, I'm kind of tepid on Gary Johnson. I don't hate him. I should say I love Gary Johnson. I just love other people.
As a person, is one of the nicest people.
Right. I would have preferred other people, but I can't deny that I have Larry Sharp because of Gary Johnson, right? And I see certain people hear Justin Amash and people in my family start to get excited about it that are kind of more lukewarm libertarian. Most of my family is libertarians, even my extended family now. But, you know, they aren't as hardcore as I am, and they were kind of wish-washy on everything. They hear Justin Amash is joining. They're like, oh, I'm ready to sign up. You know, I'll pay my dues. Like,
4 years ago, I had people coming to me that who are members of my family who knew I'm a libertarian forever. I mean, I made no bones about it in my family. And they came to me and said, who's this Gary Johnson guy? Because I really don't like these other two. This Gary Johnson seems to be making some sense. That's how you get people like that, right? So, you know, but they've got to be heard. Gary Johnson was doing five interviews a day at least on major media, not like, you know, some off place. There was a Reddit site that had a list of everyone where you go back and watch them all. And a lot of them have been taken down and changed off YouTube. But he had just tons of them. And that's how you get the message out, by just sheer numbers of getting in front of eyeballs over and over and over and over again and repeating yourself over and over and over again. Whereas somebody else gets in who's not interested, that the press doesn't label as being legitimate. And I'm sorry, that's the way it is. I mean, I don't want it to be that way. I don't think it should be that way, but it's the way it is.
But this is the point. This is the Libertarian Party. Your job is to win political elections, right? This is not the messaging branch. This is not the cultural branch.
We have things like We Are Libertarians and Reason, right? And
Cato
and Lancey. And how many libertarian podcasts are there that we are sitting here competing with all the time? The message is not that the message isn't being said and being gotten out, that the pure message isn't there. It's just that no one wants to hear it until there's some politics behind it, because then it becomes a sport for them or a blood sport, or that's when they pay attention, is when the elections come around. That's how you get the eyeballs and the ears for your ideas, but you have to get the attention first. And you can't get the attention with people who the press doesn't label as being valid.
Right. And I understand I'm being a Amash apologist right now, and I think it's just my nature of extending an olive branch. I don't at all regret my endorsement for Vermin Supreme. I think the guy has a lot of media, and that's part of it, right? He's got a circus following him. And I hope that the message from that circus translates to libertarianism and anarchy the way he wants. I don't know, but I would like to try that. That being said, I also make the same point for Justin Amash. He has a circus that follows him. It's maybe a little less circus-esque than Vermin's, but he has a set of media that follows him and will give him the time of day. And leveraging that is a huge part for him to win. Now, I prefer one over the other, but at least you and I are having the same conversation as opposed to just like arguing minutiae. And
the other side of the Vermin Supreme, where he's getting attention because of a silly circus, you got Arvin Vorha, who's got a circus of his own, but because he's going for more of a shock value, right? So there's ways to kind of do that to get attention. Which ones work better?
And I like Arvin Vorha in the same way that I like Ben Shapiro. I think he spends way too much time talking about subjects that people don't care about / kind of don't like about him. Yeah. And it's like, man, like if you just let that go and talk about the stuff you're good at, you're so eloquent. I mean, it is very rare to leave a libertarian debate and think that Arvin Vorha lost it. I mean, in most cases, people would say he was the most eloquent, polished, look good, but he spends too much time talking about age of consent. Arvin.
We interviewed him at the 2018 convention, and I was shocked kind of when just sitting down and talking to him. Okay, so you get up and you make speeches and you say things in public. a lot of that can be a rehearsal stuff, right? So a lot of that can be, I've planned this out and this is my mantra that I've been speaking forever and ever and ever. And you can just regurgitate it in that setting. But when you start to have a conversation with somebody and you still see them having that intelligence and the spark, and you realize that that's real. Like, he's not a dumb guy. It's just, I think he's chosen to go for a certain effect, and I don't agree with it.
Right. Right. Well, we've talked candidates for a while here. Let's get back into the LNC portion of things, because that's what we promised, right? So this is the controversy. This is the whole reason we even started talking about this, is people think Amash doesn't want pushback. We've gone into him participating in some debates. But that the people who generally like Amash and people who aimed for him and wanted to pick him up, like Nick Sarwark, are now pushing also for an online convention. Now, here's the thing. I might disagree with Nick Sarwark about the Amash thing, but I think the online convention, in light of the COVID-19 stuff, makes a lot of sense right now.
And it's not. And so I think that Nick is like, yeah, I think Justin's going to win. We've got a lot of work in bringing him over, and we really need to make this happen. But I also think that he would say, even if the body chose someone else, we still have to do it now to get them out there, to get them running, to get the attention, you know, campaigning. We can't wait. And all the ballots too, to make sure we're not cutting him off on any of the ballots, whoever it is. I think you would agree with that either, no matter who wins, they need to have that the ability to run.
Right.
And run effectively and run for the right number of states, then try to push it off to a July date that's imaginary that may happen. What do you do if it doesn't? What if you do if you get to the end of June and they cancel it? Then you're screwed, because you've had all this time where you could have been doing an online convention prep and planning and getting it in place, but it's still the same argument. It's not in our bylaws. We have to meet locally. So what are we going to do? Just give up on the whole year?
Right.
And have an online have a in-person convention in January next year, or February or July or whatever of next year, whenever we can do it.
Right.
You know, we have to look at solutions.
Right.
We can't just keep talking about problems. And that's what leadership is finding solutions. So there's a saying that I said earlier today that a coworker of mine had reminded me of. It's kind of a thing that, as an IT guy, to meet a person, but yeah. I mean, that's still a hybrid. That's still technically not valid, but according to the bylaws, even what we're doing next week is technically against the bylaws, according to those people. But they decided to let it go because they needed to come up with something. They had to have some sort of agreement, and they're still now they're trying to back out of it too.
Right.
But when somebody says they need, so here's the thing: when somebody says they need a drill, if you look at it, they may not need a drill. What they need is a 1/8-inch hole cut in a wall, or a 3/4-inch hole cut in a wall.
Okay.
So they're going to try and use a drill to do it, but that's not what they need. They don't need the drill. They need that solution. And in IT, we kind of is just kind of drummed in our head. We have to look for solutions to customers' problems, not just sell them a product and then try to make that product work. So who on the LNC is going and looking at this and saying, we have these problems, let's find a solution to get us what we need at the end of the day,
right,
as opposed to, I want to make sure that the tool we use is X, Y, or Z.
Yeah. The DNC and RNC ignore the bylaws, their bylaws, all the time. And because they're just their guidelines, it's not like there's some legal effect, right? They just are like, hey, we ignored it. Now, most of the time when they ignore it, it's bad. So like when Tulsi Gabbard, where they have some arbitrary bylaw, like, oh, you know, if they're pulling above 8%, we'll let them debate. And then they pull 18%, but they're thrashing another one of their candidates. They say, well, not that one, though. Right. You know, I mean, they just say, we don't feel that this is good. Right. So we're just going to change it. We're going to ignore it. Now, that's a bad way. Right. That's when we look at it and we say, well, don't we want to adhere then to bylaws, because they keep us from doing really corrupt things like that the Democrats and Republicans do. Yes, but again, they're always going to be guidelines. They will always be. There's not a legal thing behind them. You run it however you want it.
Well, they're concerned there's going to be a legal challenge to our candidates on the ballots if we didn't follow our bylaws in order to nominate that candidate. But every other party is doing this is so that they don't have a leg to stand on in that regard.
Right.
Right. But the thing is that when you have an issue like this come up, and there are times that you have to kind of violate those bylaws, and it's leadership that dictates when, knowing when to do that, when not to do that. And the reason we don't have a king of the Libertarian Party, and we have a lot of people inputting, is that if we can get all those people to agree and it's the right thing to do, then it might make sense. That might be a level set of when you have the support to do that. Right.
Right.
So, and they can say right now that there's too much of a split, so therefore it's not the right thing to do. I said, maybe, but from me looking outside, looking in, and seeing the chaos that's created and the animosity that's happened and the fact that we're behind on this and we're going to look like idiots to the rest of the world, all of that taken into account, I don't think that they're doing the right thing on the leadership side. I think they're focusing on the wrong minutia bits and not what's best for the party.
Right.
And if it were me and I was on the LNC and I got to that situation and I said, you know, my principles are that I'm going to follow the bylaws and make sure that I protect the delegates and protect the party. But we're in a situation right now that I don't think can be solved by our current rules, and we have to find a solution. I'm going to break those rules to make this happen. And if the body doesn't want me in here as an LNC member anymore, they can vote me out.
I promise that if you're watching these LNC debates, I promise that you do not care about the bylaws enough to say, but the bylaws at any moment in time, you will never find yourself stopping and being like, oh my gosh, we need more bylaws right now. Like, you will find yourself praying for less of them. Sorry to interrupt, but I just feel like we're kind of in this caveat here. Like, it's like, oh, but you know, we want to follow the rules.
And it's your thing too. We complain all the time about how, yeah, we complain all the time about we should have all laws should be easy to read. We shouldn't have volumes of law. We shouldn't have a law that's 3,000 pages, right? How big are our bylaws? You know, they're talking about quoting page 400 and something of the bylaws. I'm like, how big are our bylaws exactly? And maybe, maybe we should take a look at that and really address this. And it's really irritated me that we've had these conventions over the past several years where we get together and we kind of make a change here, we kind of make a change there, but there's never enough time to really get into the nitty gritty on this and do something about things that need to be taken care of and have some forethought. We're just like, let's get our LNC guy in place. Let's get our chair guy in place. If it's a presidential year, let's make sure our president guy gets in place and all the other stuff can happen. We'll let other people worry about that. And there's never time for that. You know, it's like always squashed because they want to get to the meat.
And just in perfect libertarian principle, guys, the law has, these laws have not stopped either side from doing what they want to do. They just utilize the ones that they like and ignore the ones that they don't like.
Well, the Supreme Court came back and said that the DNC can do whatever they want.
Right. It's their club. It's our club, right? And so here's the thing. Like, when we talk about ignoring the bylaws, I'm just saying hanging logs. I'm not saying I'm favoring one side or the other. Both sides of this online and physical convention have both at various times been like, nope, bylaws says you can't. Nope, bylaws says you can't. Or that's a stupid law. That's a stupid law. Both sides. Like I'm saying, this whole thing with Nick's corruption and these LNC people feeling threatened or whatever to vote one way or the other has all been within the context of the bylaws. So the bylaws aren't stopping corruption. It's not helping, right? Whether you think it's there or not, it's certainly not helping and it's not stopping anybody. Because just like laws in real life that we talk about all the time as libertarians, they aren't good at making moral things happen. That's kind of where I even started this podcast. Was the law does not make moral things happen. And so you don't just say, well, we can create the certain perfect set of laws that make it so that this corruption within the LNC that clearly exists, even if you don't think from Nick, from the people counter to Nick, that it isn't making it go away. And they're doing a substantial amount of damage. I guess you could say both sides, but at least one side, you know what I mean, is doing damage within the context of the bylaws to hurt this party.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the Democrats always try to do. They try to make these programs that are going to solve these problems. and they're going to come up with all the different options and variations and things that are going to make it work, and they just need to adjust it here and fix it there, and then they can get it right. And it never works because they can never adequately see every single issue or problem that comes up. Mm-hmm. And in a deliberative body like the government, and power being what it is and politics being what it is, you see what happens. And we're seeing the same thing in the LNC. How can we say that we're better when we're doing the same things? We have members of the LNC who are so upset that Nick Starwark's trying to override the will of the delegates that they're willing to override the will of the delegates in order to stop him. How does that make sense? You're doing exactly what you're complaining that he's doing, and you're honest about it and open about it. How does that make it better?
It's a mess right now. Like, this is honestly, I mean, you've been following this.
This is an Overwatch.
Much like, I know it's an Overwatch thing. You can tell I play video games. Sorry. You've been following this much longer than I have. For me, this is, and I did watch them a couple years ago. This is the most contentious and fractured, and I would say this is the worst patch that I've seen in LNC history. Yep. For me, it's hard to fathom a time when literally over half of your body says the chair is being corrupt. About a third of the body is saying that the chair is, you know, holy and has not been corrupt with them ever. And then you've got the chair, right? Who is kind of doing whatever he's doing. He's having drinking problems or whatever. And you just kind of say, like, I think for me, this is such a disaster at the worst possible time, right? During a crisis.
So if you look at the what happened last Saturday Saturday before we had the 8-hour marathon, right? At the end of the meeting, it was getting so contentious that there was somebody who said something and complained about something. And Nick said, that's not the case. Let's move on. And so that person wasn't recognized anymore, and they snide under their breath, made a comment about how that she was being ignored. And so it's just like, quit being kids. We're not 5 years old, right? These rules are there to supposedly to help make sure that the minority voice is heard, but the majority rules out at the end of the day. That's what all these Robert's Rules of Order are for, is to make sure that the minority is heard and minority is respected. At the end of the day, the majority rules, right? And you can't put limits on the body like they're wanting to try to do and then try to say that you're protecting them.
Right.
You know, you're being a parent to me at this point. You're telling me what's best for me, and I should just follow you and say what is right and what is wrong. I may have been willing to go along completely with you, but guess what? We're libertarians. You start telling me I shouldn't do something. You know, right. That's the worst thing to do to a libertarian.
You know, right.
But all these people tell you, you should stay home for the COVID thing. I am going to go out and I'm going to get a gun and I'm going to be the most free person ever because you told me not to. Right. So,
yeah, I think the please wear a mask in our store thing and the libertarians are like, you'll never see my business again. Meanwhile, we've spent the past 20 years telling them they can discriminate against minorities and, you know, you don't have to serve gay people. You don't have to serve black people. That's totally cool. But all of a sudden,
but you can't hire the people we agree that, you know, or shouldn't be hired, right? So you just make that person
the immigrant thing, or tell me to wear a mask in your store and abide by your rules. There's we pick when we care about the store owner's rulership, right? And this is kind of the perfect example. I don't want to get sidetracked to that because we've talked that on other COVID
things. The LNC. My call right now is I think that I have a list. I've been paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
I have a list of people that I will never vote for LNC again. I've got a list of people who I am ashamed that I voted for 2 years ago that are sitting on there now, and I wish I could take it back. And I know that there's actually something in the bylaws where that we could pull last convention's delegates and get somebody go through a judicial review process and have all that done. I mean, I don't want to get into that. That's silly, but I kind of wish I could at this point. I wish I could take back to my vote on some of these people. But it's just like, what do you do? You know, you expect the people that you put in there to represent you to not act like children. We're supposed to be trying to tell people that we are a big boy party, that we can we can compete with the Republicans and the Democrats for the hearts and minds of the people. And then we act like little children in the middle of any crisis that comes along. Mm-hmm. And I know they all think that they're right. They all have a righteous indignation.
Yep.
And that's one thing I've seen out of libertarians that really kind of irritates me, is that we do have a righteous indignation. So we're unwilling to bend or compromise or think about the implications of what our thoughts are. And maybe this isn't the time to talk about that. And maybe we should do something, you know. It's just like they have no capacity for straying outside of those hard, strict confines. But we're human beings, and we're in a society that isn't what we want it to be already. We have to understand that. We can't, you know, wish everything away to be our nirvana and our Garden of Eden, and this is the way we should act like it is already. It's like, no, we need to get it there first, and you need to take the time and do the work to do that. You can't just wish it that way.
Right. Right. Well, we are about at closing subject time. I will give you some of my final thoughts, is what they're called. That's right. Closing subjects, final thoughts, whatever. You can tell I'm not the regular host of this. Chris, we miss you, buddy. Well,
I don't think he's upset that he's missed me rail about the LNC for half an hour.
This is an episode he probably didn't want to do. I would love to. I'm sure he would have loved to talk about the Arbery thing. But yeah, LNC drama is awful. It's the worst it's ever been. Anyway, let me start off. First of all, please catch our show. If you're listening to this on Friday, please catch our show tomorrow, Saturday. Again, this is huge for us. We're working with Reason Magazine. It's going to be going to their platform and our platform. Matt Welch is going to be moderating it. Is it Kentucky?
Kentucky State, LP.
It's the Kentucky LP. We're working with
There's a co-sponsor, I think, Missouri LP too.
Oh, and Missouri LP too. We're working with a lot of different groups, okay, combined. And a lot of them are what some would consider bigger than us. Of course, we love ourselves, so we're not going to say whatever. But look, let's be honest. Reason's a big deal, right? We like them. We quote them. This is a great partnership. This is something that if this goes well tomorrow and you guys tune in, there is more opportunities to see the voices from We're Libertarians go more mainstream. We need that real bad, right? Because this is we have great voices here of, Reinhold said it earlier, all different kinds. We got people that support Amash and Hornberger and Vermin Supreme and Judge Jim Gray and Larry Sharp and Spike Cohen and right. And this is, and Noda and none of the above. There you go. I almost forgot the most important one and none of the above. And so you have all these different people that combine to make this network as good as it is, because that diversity of thought is what allows you to have complex conversations. As opposed to just, well, I heard this from Ben Shapiro, and then as soon as I turn it in the workplace, I get smacked down. Well, that's going to happen all the time because it's one person. What happens when you're in a forum of thought, and believe me, everything you guys see on the air is discussed a great deal of hours behind the scenes between people that we respect that both agree and disagree with us. And you see that final product make it to the air. So please tune in tomorrow. If you're a Patreon supporter, please continue to support us on Patreon. It is what keeps us going. It's what keeps Chris going. It's the reason we have this channel right now and why you're seeing it on so many different platforms. Thank you, Christy Avery, for your donation to let StreamYard go up, because this has been incredible for us. Being able to go onto like six different platforms at once is friggin' unbelievable. But be a part of it. To recap some things in the show that we talked about, man, the Arbery case hurts. It's sad. I think we talked about it from a very cold analytical perspective. This is a human being who is off of this world way too early. Your life would be better had the shooting not happened. His life would be better. His family's would be better. But society is better if these shootings stop happening. And so instead of turning an eye or saying, you know, I had a great friend of mine just say, I'm just so sick of talking about these things. And I understand why. It's very, it is hard to throw in your allegiance with people that don't have your back. And I understand that these are the same people. I've taken a debate stage before where somebody said, this guy can't have an opinion because he's a man or because he's white or because whatever. And I understand what it's like to be dismissed and to feel wary of one side of the spectrum. But if you can find unity, this is what Martin Luther King Jr. did well. Find that unity. Shooting a jogger for no reason, literally no reason, is a great place where you can say, hey, I know you and I don't always see racial divide the same way. This one I'm with you on. I will stand with you on. And you'll lend yourself a lot of credibility for that next time that you have maybe that skepticism. Because then those same sides will say, well, I know this guy doesn't always take the white person's side. We've been together before. We've stood together before. So I'm going to give him the time of day. You lend yourself so much credibility when you change it up and take your stance and take a nuanced stance and say, I'm going to stand with the right case this time. And not just stay quiet when it's convenient. Like I said, don't become the Ben Shapiro where you say, I really love talking about trans issues, but when all of a sudden somebody beats a trans person to death, you hear the crickets chirp. You know, if you really feel one way, okay, fine, but where's your limit? You know, where is your line where you say, no, this is where I stand in solidarity. This is a human being. I care about that person. And I'm not going to be quiet about it. I'm going to be loud and proud, and I'm going to stand with these people that say that shooting was wrong, that killing him was the wrong thing to do, that jumping out of your car with a loaded shotgun is wrong, that smearing someone's reputation in an accidental death when they're the victim is wrong, that calling the police because a black person is jogging in my neighborhood is wrong. And there are so many opportunities that you have to say, that is wrong, and I'm going to stand for what is right, and I am going to extend my voice and my platform to that. You know, and I think that that's important to do. As far as the LNC stuff, it's a cluster F. I honestly am so glad I'm out of politics in general. I've made an endorsement. And I wish Vermin and Spike all the best. I really wish whoever the Libertarian candidate is all the best, because I, like I said, we still have people that talk about that only know Gary Johnson and that only know Harry Brown and that only know Barr, because Ron these Paul. Are the people who ran for president, and Ron Paul and other people who ran for president. Right. And this is why we know them. So whoever wins, I still wish them all the best. But it's a mess in the LNC right now. And it is partly because of these weird bylaws. But it's more so because of the corrupt decay of personhood that is in there. Because like we were talking about, laws, they aren't any better or worse than the people who make them and enforce them. You know, they don't have personalities of their own. And you can't make a bad person good through law. You can't make a good person bad through law. And so we have some inept people. We have some good people too, and people that I trust, which is why I talk about it at all. But we have a problem on the LNC, and they've made some very poor decisions, and they've done some very poor planning. And I think some of them even own it when they've been a part of the problem, and some of it are all too eager to kick it on to the other side. The bottom line is, if you are working in the LP right now, first of all, hats off to you. I can't even imagine. But secondly, make sure that is what is most important to you, is not just saying, did we do the legal thing today? But to say, when you host your meetings and you support whoever it is you support or nominate, to say, was this a good person? Was this a person of strong moral character? Because right now you can see it on the LNC that moral character not being there, no amount of bylaw is going to fix it. If you put somebody who's lacking in it. All right. And then, Reinhold, your final thoughts.
I don't want to go too long. Just want to say, I agree that the LNC is, devolved into a complete, mess. And, I don't know what else to do other than to vote them all out and start over. But, I know that there's some people who announced that they're running for, LNC again. I hope we can do some LNC votes. Right now, the state chairs are urging the delegates not to vote for anybody but president and vice president and get it over with, and then leave all the other stuff to the physical convention, which is kind of convenient that the LNC is going to extend their reign, as it were, for several months. If Trump had tried to do that, I think there might have been some kickback. I know a lot of people don't want to get into it and start reading the mailing list and watching what all these people are saying on the mailing list, which is probably about half of what they actually talk about to each other, but they're supposed to do it all on the mailing list. So there's a lot of snide comments, and there has been for the last 2 years. And there are certain people who instigate it more than others. And we know who they are. That's not hard to find out. But they make themselves known on that list. So if you want to go look and you want to see what's being going on in the party, you can read and see everything. It's there. We strive for openness and visibility. So that's been the goal. So maybe it's just the case that we don't get to see how the sausage is made in the RNC, the RNC or the DNC. So, maybe they're even worse. Who knows? And I suspect they probably are, but we're supposed to be better. And we're supposed to be able to prove that this organizational system of non-governmental free organization of people can work. And right now we are proving the opposite. And so it's either got to change or we're just going to just invalidate our whole point of existing in at all. So I hope somebody, some leadership somehow pops in place, and there are some small shining bright stars in there that I think have the capability to do that and are trying to do that. I just hope they prevail. I hope that it succeeds and we get the best solution for the party, that we can get our candidate, whoever it is we choose, on all the ballots and gets backed by all the states, and none of the states start throwing their own little hissy fits and saying that they're going to put someone else on their ballots because they didn't like the way this was done or the way that was done. I just wish people would be more adult and realize what's best for the party, not necessarily what they think is best for their view of the party going forward. So that's all I had to say about that. And again, with Arbery, that's unfortunately not the first or the last time we've had somebody shot by either a policeman or a post policeman, or just being in the wrong place at the wrong time. I want to see it stopped. These are human lives. And if you can't have some compassion for a human life being taken, I think maybe you're looking at the wrong things. So, that's pretty much it for me.
Sweet. Well, my dogs are starting to go crazy. Apparently something's going on in the background. So again, viewers, thank you again for tuning in. Tune in tomorrow. Reinhold, always a pleasure to speak with you, my friend.
You too.
It's been too long, man. Yeah. We'll be around. We'll be around. You know where to find us. We're Libertarians, guys. Thanks for tuning in. We love you to death.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. And you can find more great shows like this at wearelibertarians.com. Shows like We Are Libertarians with Chris Spangle, The Brian Nichols Show, The Boss Hog of Liberty, Now Hear This with Chris Spangle, Gingerarchy with Tricia Stewart Mann, and our training podcast, Upward, Libertarian Activism. All of these shows are supported by our patrons. If you'd like to become a Patreon member, visit wearelibertarians.com. Thank you so much for listening to this show.